McGill Daily of the Daily.
I'm McGill Daily.
Hi, I'm calling from the McGill Daily. Can I ask you some questions?
Is anyone using some pizza?
News. Will
you design? Could I see you for a second?
We're going to cap this.
Together. News, can you dummy?
Did that story come in yet?
Editorials in 5 minutes.
McGill Daily.
Unfit to print.
Hi, my name is Erin Hudson, and I'm a news editor at the McGill Daily. On this special edition of Unfit to Print, we'll be hearing my interview with Heather Monroe Bloom. This interview was taken on November 14th, hours before around 1,000 McGill students gathered for an open forum event called We Are All McGill in front of the James Administration Building. The interview was scheduled before the events of November 10th. Principal Heather Monroe Bloom called for a fall roundtable discussion with campus media, Le Daily, the McGill Tribune, and the McGill Daily. The roundtable involves each reporter taking turns to ask Monroe Bloom questions. Traditionally, the roundtable takes place in Monroe Bloom's office in the James Administration Building on the fifth floor. However, on November 14th, the roundtable took place in Vice Principal External Relations Olivier Marcel's office. The following interview features Anthony Lukosis, campus editor for Le Daily, Elisa Mule, the news editor for the McGill Tribune, and myself representing the McGill Daily. Also present at the interview was Director of Media Relations, Doug Sweet, along with Vice Principal External Relations, Olivier Marcel.
And so I can't prejudge it. I actually wasn't on campus at the time. We do have emergency systems. We do have actually a number of broad communication mechanisms. And Thursday was an unusual day. We had somewhere between 15,000 and 30,000 students at the edge of our campus demonstrating. And we happened to be situated right across from the Premier's office. And so, of course, I want to understand what happened. But it was not a usual day. There was communication. It also would seem to be that things moved very, very fast and changed very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Just to follow up to that, I understand in an interview with Mr. Mendelson, that there was someone in charge of administering the emergency text message, and it was chosen not to use that system because it would actually, I guess, increase the amount of students on campus, or the amount of students in the area, and it would actually put more students in harm. I feel like, I don't know how to say this. But
just say it. You don't need to be careful.
Why did the university act with mistrust to the students that they would automatically assume that students would engage in violence and incite violence in the issue instead of acting in the best interest of student safety?
Yeah. Well, again, Deputy Provost Mendelson was here and I wasn't.
Okay.
So I think that'll be part of the investigation. What actually happened, I think, is a big question. One of the issues, of course, with demonstrations that are called for the university is that with social media, everybody knows about them and anybody can come. And one of the real considerations for us as a community in working to have fora where there's open debate and an exchange of views is also to have the debates and exchanges for the community within the community and distribute it. You know, we're a big place, so these should be happening all across the university and generally are. But with social media, with tens of thousands of students or protesters, who knows? You know, they're not all students, right? Then the issue is not a question of distrust of students. It is a question of the mix of protesters you get in a climate, and you just look around the world, the climate of activism. So any demonstration can become a bit of a lightning rod for activists across the city with a range of issues at play. That's one of the things that has to be balanced.
Sorry.
But I understand as well. You know, for the text messaging, we depend on people signing on to it. And one of the things you might do is encourage people to sign on, because it'll only be as good as the sign-on. We'll find out whether it was used or if it was used, when it was used. But It is, I understand, one of four or five ways that we have of communicating with people in an emergency. We have a very well-developed emergency management, communication, and other program. And one of the things I want to know is how well did that work in this circumstance?
So you weren't there that day. You're saying that you want to wait for the investigation to answer any kind of question on what actually happened.
And it's an internal investigation, right? So this is not just maybe I'll say a couple of things about it. Have you seen my releases? So you'll know that it's an internal investigation. It's an investigation of what happened on our campus, mm-hmm. and in our processes. And it is not a, clearly, it's not there to stand instead of any normal processes, disciplinary, legal, or otherwise. So if there are complaints that people have, those complaints can still be filed. If there are disciplinary measures that people feel should be taken, those can still be implemented. But my reason for moving quickly to appoint Professor Jutra as investigator and to have a December 15th deadline, it's a pretty intense, say, for him, 1 month turnaround, is I want to get the facts understood as best as we can. It will be a public report when it comes out, and you'll certainly get it.
Okay. So my question is, since you want to wait for the investigation to answer any question on what actually happened, there's a demonstration happening today. What steps have you taken to avoid the situation to happen again?
Well, we've worked very hard, as you can imagine, to be as planned as we can be.
Okay.
For a peaceful demonstration. I want to stress as well, everybody has a responsibility to keep our campus safe. This is, you know about community safety. Community safety only happens when there is a widespread engagement to have a peaceful, healthy campus and or community, and that's what we have to count on as well. But we have, you can imagine, spent a lot of time.
So in terms of police intervention, for instance, what instruction have you been given to adapt the appearance at which the security would call the police or would decide not to call the
police? Well, again, I don't know exactly what happened. I'm waiting for the investigation to see that. But we do have a line of decision-making well set up for today.
So you adapted?
I don't know if it was adapted because I don't know exactly what happened. We have always had a sort of chain of communication on this. What exactly happened Thursday night is one of the questions of the investigation. I have been told that nobody in the administration called the riot police. I understand that when there was an occupation in the building and there were, and I've seen the video of the people who came in and occupied offices, there were a number of them who were hooded and masked. People were very afraid, and I believe that from within the building, amongst those who were scared, a call for security came, and a call went out to the police. That's to the police, not to the riot squad. And you have to understand, our security people are not police. They have no policing powers. We're not like many university campuses where police actually have policing powers, carry batons, and so forth. Our security people are there to help encourage security, to be of support where they can, but they have no policing powers. And so normally, and again, I'm going to talk about normally, not Thursday night, every effort's used to avoid calling the police unless there's a sense that threats to, particularly to that physical harm, cannot be prevented on the basis of the community measures we have within the university.
Mm. To be more specific, you said you were, I think the word used was maybe not disturbed, but in a way disturbed.
I was disturbed. I was very, well, I was very disturbed at the, you know, for Frosh Week, we have the local community police on campus, and we're actually proud of the relationship that's been built with the community police and the university over the last several years. The fact that they participate in, you know, our welcoming of new students on campus, because it's also, you know, people are all out in the community. It's a very important relationship. So the presence of a policeman on campus or a policewoman on campus per se isn't necessarily bad. What I was shocked at is what was clearly a very dramatic exchange with a riot squad on campus, and that is not usual, and it is very disturbing.
So you were disturbed by the presence of the riot police. So what steps have you taken to avoid these presence today?
Well, again, it's a two-way street, right? It's a two-way street. Once we call the community police, we have no control over the policing measures that are used. So, as I understand it, no one called the riot squad, but the police have to use their judgment about their own ability to control a situation to prevent harm from happening. The best way to manage safety is for everyone to take responsibility for it. The question that's been raised repeatedly is, did the administration call the riot squad? My understanding is no, but again, Professor Jutro will investigate that, because we actually, there will be a record of what happened, and we need to understand that well. The question of who's in charge when the police are called, we've had a protocol for that, and we'll see if that was followed. We have a protocol for today that has a senior member of the administration working with the Security Control Center, monitoring the activities and making some judgments about that.
Is it Jim Neisel?
It is Jim Neisel, yeah.
Thank you.
And so my question is about...
Professor Neisel.
Professor Neisel.
Yeah.
My question is about the inquiry.
Investigation.
The investigation.
There is a difference, between an inquiry and an investigation.
So it's
an investigation.
Okay. So why was Professor Jutra chosen, and why was it chosen to be an internal as opposed to an external?
Look, I have my interest as principal is that we learn from what happened to do the best that we can to not have that happen again. It was an abnormal day all around. It was an abnormal day in the city of Montreal, and it was certainly an abnormal day on the downtown campus, and it was disturbing, and a lot of people are hurting from what happened on Thursday. My deepest desire is to do whatever we can to ensure that doesn't happen again. In that regard, I wanted someone who has a deep loyalty and concern for the university and the well-being of everyone in it, and yet who is known for impartiality, independence. He is a highly distinguished member, trained as a lawyer, has worked at the Supreme Court. He's a guy who's beyond reproach in his character. In a university, we do a lot of things that depend on internal judgments. The whole peer review system is us, judging ourselves as a community. We have a very self-governed approach to our operations. And so choosing someone of the highest distinction, whose integrity is so well-regarded, who has training to look at facts and make judgments, and who was willing to undertake to do this. He was the first person I thought of to do it, who's, would be able to conduct it. So those are the reasons. You've seen the terms of my letter, the terms of reference for it. He's got complete autonomy. He doesn't report to me in the course of doing this investigation. The report will be released with findings and recommendations, and I have confidence that he'll serve the university. Not any one individual, not any one special interest group, but he will serve the university. That's the purpose of the investigation. He will have every freedom to call on whomever he wants to see whatever records or other things he wants. He will, I believe, but again, he's establishing his own procedures, which I think he'll announce later in the week, but he will have the, I've asked for the full cooperation of the administration in giving him what he wants. My letter calls on every member of the community to cooperate with the investigation. I imagine that he'll make a widespread call for people to make submissions to him of, you know, videos, depositions, formal reports, and so forth.
So for the decision-making of choosing him as an individual, was this a decision that you made?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was a unilateral decision?
It was my decision. It was my judgment that this was the way to proceed.
And will he be compensated for this?
No. I mean, he's a professor at the university, right? So
but
no.
Nothing.
No.
Okay.
Over to you.
A lot of students, and I'd say increasing number of faculty members, they see that the administration might see itself maybe as a separate entity from the student body, in the sense that the administration is dissing itself from student clubs, for example, with the use of the McGill name, other instances on campus. And I think that the events of Thursday helped to kind of galvanize the opposition and make students and faculty, I guess, feel more strongly about this. And you could see that from everyone, all of the protesters outside on Friday. Do you think that this is fair, that that a lot of people are sort of jumping on the boat of the administration sees itself as a separate entity from the students, and that calling the police was another instance of the administration sort of acting unilaterally, not in the best interest of students? Sorry, do you...
So the question? sorry. I heard the backdrop to it, but what's your...
What do you have to say to...
Do I think it's true, and do I think it's fair, and...
Right. What do you have to say to members of the McGill community that find the administration sort of as a separate...
Yeah. Well, maybe a couple of comments in that regard. One, there is always room to communicate more. And there's no question about that. One of the things we're thinking about is, how do you communicate with a community of 50,000 people who are on two large campuses and spread out through our affiliated teaching hospitals? And there's not one, you know, one symbol of the administration. Maybe it's me, but in fact, there's administration throughout the university. Some of our administrators are out on strike right now. So, you know, this is a very widespread. We are the largest. We just to give you a little bit of background about McGill. We have more property than any entity on the Montreal Island. This is a blessing and a challenge, because we have over half of our buildings built before the Second World War, and that's a big part of our economic challenge as well, with over $1 billion in deferred maintenance and so forth. But we have, you know, a very large distributed community of people. We have a lot of resources that we manage. We have big accountabilities to several levels of government. I mean, it's a complex organization, many faculties, many departments, many expressions of view. We have a huge diversity. So on the question of, you know, what is the feeling about administration, there's been a very active voice of positioning, and I would not say it's a big voice in numbers, it's a big voice in dominance in one of our student papers, in the rhetoric of the leadership of the Undergraduate Student Society at McGill. There is a very, very clear position that is devoid of facts about, you know, what the administration is. I think the facts are there's a tremendous amount of consultation that goes on. There are many formal bodies for doing that. There are a number of informal bodies to do that. But the question is, how do you have people feel they're being heard? How do you have people feel they're being understood? And again, one of the challenges, there's no one solution to that, because people want to be heard in different ways. They want to participate in different ways. So one of the things that struck me about the fall is that there is a very vocal minority voice, there is a private voice that's kind of response to that of, you know, how supportive to the administration. But I think there's something like about 80% of our community that's working hard to get on doing what they came to McGill to do, and that actually is finding the focus not on the academic issues, not on the quality of what's happening, not on the innovation of pedagogy, not on all the things, the kind of research that's available, the kinds of work placements and other internships available. All those things that are normally the subject of the place for professors, the environment for research and scholarship, those things have been drowned out by a very singular focus on a theme of activism. Now, that's not just at McGill, right? If you looked at the New York Times website this morning, you would have seen an article with a very broad theme about how general societal activism is now coming full focus onto our university campuses. I was a teenager in the 60s. I was a student in the early, university student in the early 70s. You know, that was part of my life then. The themes were a bit different, but there are moments in society, and I guess one of the things I'd like to see is more academic focus on what this means. More academic focus on what is the place of a university in responding to social problems. And so I'm not going to say an opinion is fair or unfair. People are entitled to their opinions. And, you know, maybe I'll just finish my response to that saying, if there are other ways for us to communicate, I'm more than happy to explore those. It's interesting, you know, I started the town halls when I came in as principal. And there was a great, there was good participation in them in the early years, but there was also a concern expressed by those who didn't feel they got to speak at them, because it's always the way it is, right? It's that way in classrooms. Some people talk more than others and are more comfortable doing that. Couldn't we have a more structured town hall where people could send in the themes they wanted to talk about and we hear from more voices and more points of view? You know, now the feeling is, well, town halls are too structured. So, you know, it's a constant process of trying to figure out what is the right thing. But I would say that no fora for an exchange between, you know, the vice principals and me and the community are a substitute for dialogue, debate, academic, you know, free and open exchange happening at the local level, at the departmental level, at the level of the faculties. And we need real engagement with this across the university. And frankly, I hear there's a lot of that, right? We've got Richard Falk at the law school today, right? That's controversial. There are people who have very strong points of view in both directions. And do I defend that? Absolutely. You know, because that's what you have to do at a university. Doesn't mean I associate myself with every point of view.
We're waiting for these investigations, those results. But there are very serious allegations made against this university, and waiting would mean that maybe we have people who are currently on the job that were who have been, according to the students' allegation, abusing students. So are you ready to take that risk of having during a month?
Look, there are allegations of abuse in a number of directions. I believe in due process, and I believe in the legal system, and this does not preclude anybody taking action that's appropriate.
Okay. How would we go if a student said that they were... they feel like they were abused by an employee of the university? How should they go with forming like a formal, what do you call that, a formal...
complaint?
Yes.
Well, it depends what the complaint is, and it depends whether they...
So physical abuse by security chiefs.
We have normal processes. So, I mean, for you in educating the public, we have policies and procedures, whether it's disciplinary, whether it's a sense of abuse of authority.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, if there are concerns about legal breaches in the law, there's a legal process for that too. We really encourage that where things happen within the university, people use the normal procedures, and they happen at the local level. So going to your local department or faculty, for example, as a student, if you have a complaint to file, would be the place to start. What happened Thursday is quite unusual. I'm glad it's unusual. I don't want it to ever happen again. But that was a mix of insiders and outsiders, not just police, not just riot squads, but insiders and outsiders. And so then the particulars really count. What happened really counts.
Yes.
You know, what the concern is, how a person feels they may have been hurt or wronged, would determine where you go.
Okay, so you're not concerned about the security of students when it comes to...
Of course I'm concerned about the security every day.
I mean, you're not particularly more concerned in the light of what happened in your office, for instance, when it comes to relationship with the security agents.
I'm very concerned about what happened, but I'm concerned in both directions.
Okay.
You know, there are colleagues who feel they were hurt. There were people who were pushed aside by masked intruders who wouldn't identify themselves.
So you feel we can wait this month?
I think if anyone wants to file a disciplinary complaint or press legal charges, mm-hmm. this does not get in the way of them doing that.
Okay. And in the fact that there was this agreement for the anonymity of those people and...
Well, that's so that people feel they can come and tell their story. So there's nothing that Professor Jutra will learn that will identify any one individual.
Mm-hmm.
But that's different than talking about the security, talking about students, talking about people who weren't part of the university community, talking about the communication that happened with the police. So all of that will happen, but I actually felt it was very important that those who want to go talk and say what happened have immunity. Immunity with respect to what they tell Professor Jutra and what evidence they present to him. That doesn't prevent anybody from presenting the same evidence to someone else. Okay, so if you say you wanted to file a legal charge or you wanted to file a disciplinary complaint, you take your same evidence to, mm-hmm. or a complaint even, to someone else at the same time. This doesn't say everything else stops while this happens, but it's principle, McGill, for me to take measures that affect the university, that may change some of our systems, that may look at problems here or there. I'm waiting until that. But I deliberately wanted to give immunity to those who are making representation because I actually want to know what happened.
Okay.
But it's only immunity from information that Professor Jutra has. It doesn't prevent them from using that information anywhere else. Okay.
I'm sorry, by immunity I meant specifically the occupiers. They were granted immunity. Would that prevent them from filing a formal complaint? Would they lose immunity by doing that?
No.
Okay.
No. Nor is anyone immune from doing anything in relation to them aside from the fact that they occupy the offices. So everything goes every way, right?
So you mean like before or after?
But there could be other elements of it, okay? They were let out with a one-time pass.
Okay.
No charges on occupation were made.
So there could be other things that they did that they could be charged with?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know about it, right?
Okay.
That's why we're having an investigation. So,
thank you.
So I hope you're clear on this. It's a real important point, and it's a bit of a complicated one. And the language, because I wanted the language to have legal value in the letter, is complicated language, right? So what it says precisely is that what happens between Professor Jutra and those who make representation to him. That is not going to have any names identified, nor will names being identified be a subject of any legal or disciplinary action. So, you know, it will be very much vesting in him the judgment to say, you know, without naming names, here's a series of what I understand happened, what the facts are as I understand them. Here are the number of people, the number of submissions, you know, something about the kind of process that took place, which he'll determine. And then on the basis of that, here are some comments I have and here are some recommendations I have. Again, with a very precise point of to do our utmost to prevent this not happen, you know, make sure this not happen again. And so that doesn't interfere with any other processes that people want to engage in any direction. Okay.